listening to the B-Fox and B-Frank show, and we knew this day would come. Unfortunately, for some, fortunately for the Michigan Wolverines, they are the national champions. They take down Washington 34-13 in a game that was mostly close for two quarters. But I think this is kind of just the epitome of Michigan football this season. Absolutely zero style points for really everything. But the defense just ground a very good offense into a pulp. They really could have just run the ball every single play, but tried to get a little cute in the middle of the game, got close, and they kept trying to make JJ McCarthy a thing, which he is not. But at the end of the day, Michigan's defense just did what it has done all year long. This was a better offense than they faced in the Big Ten, but same result in terms of just making Washington uncomfortable seemingly every snap, and just really never letting the Huskies get in the groove and trying to chase the whole way, which was, played out exactly as Michigan would have hoped.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about how the Michigan ground game was going to have success against Washington's defense. It was exactly like that. It was very funny to see Michigan try and throw the ball out of nowhere for no reason whatsoever. Every third down, instead of just running it, they decided to throw it. They did not pick up one for, I think it was three quarters. To JJ McCarthy for using his legs and continuing to run the ball where they had success, as opposed to forcing passes, which he was doing a bit in the first half. But a couple of coverage breakdowns made his numbers look more gaudy than they were. Really, I think there are two things. Obviously, line of scrimmage was absolutely dominated by Michigan, which has been the story all season long. So credit to them there in that group. When Pegs did have time and space to make throws, he missed almost every single one of them, which is wildly uncharacteristic of him, especially this season. He had, you know, Roma Dunze open on multiple opportunities deep, whether it was, you know, post or flag routes, getting through the coverage in the zone defense and finding that soft spot, and Penix just missed him high on a few different throws. And obviously Johnson being injured really slowed down and changed the trajectory of the Washington offense. They were, one, significantly more predictable in that they were going to throw the ball more often than not, but two, there was no burst there. He really was playing at maybe 50%, and that hurt through the entire game, especially though when they got into the red zone the few times they did.
Yeah, I mean, the big miss on fourth down to Adunze, where got a little crossed up, just thought he was wide open. Penix still throwing the corner routes. And yeah, even the first possession, third and goal, just airmailed it, what would have been a touchdown. You can't give Michigan those breaks, really, and hope to win. And Washington's offensive scheme is a lot of one-on-one on the outside. Michigan did a great job forcing receivers towards the boundary, and Washington tried to use Westover a little bit in the middle of the field, but that was a little bit too little too late. And when Michigan had the ball, Donovan Edwards, just right off the bat, two huge touchdown runs the first quarter. He had over 100 yards in this game to bring his total to less than 500 rushing yards all season. This was far and away his biggest output, doubling up what he did against Penn State, which was his only game all year, in which he eclipsed 50 yards on the ground. And then over time, Blake Corum doing what Blake Corum does. I think the only bet I won yesterday was 2+ touchdowns for Corum, so he got that late. But yeah, it was just the kind of the classic thing that, you know, Washington, Oregon, USC, UCLA, all going to have to adjust to, and they come to the Big Ten. Like, they've got great skill position players, and Washington's offensive line for a lot of the year was very good, but Michigan's lines were so much better. And that really was the difference in this game. Michigan very easily could have had Cade McNamara or a number of other quarterbacks running the offense in this game, and it would have been the same result. They have superior lines, superior backs, and can kind of neutralize everything that Washington does well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And congrats to Michigan. You are the national champs. I did. I was pissed off after the game, and I did send a tweet that I was hoping to incite riot with, and said that Florida State beats this team. But unfortunately, we'll never know.
Prove you're wrong. You can't.
Yeah. Fortunately, I did not hear much backlash. So I guess that's the long and short of it.
Yeah. All right. So that's it for football this year. I mean, if you want to look at transfer class ratings to look at who might the top 10 be for next year, I encourage you to do that. There's a great team out of Bloomington that's just cleaning up. Hoping for bowl eligibility, but we'll see what happens. Going over to
Illinois State's doing well in the portal, huh?
Yeah. going over to basketball, more of a cheery topic of late. Start with you on winners. The Seton Hall Pirates started the season a little rocky. You talked about it on the show, but once you've gotten to Big East play, they have been just knocking off ranked team after ranked team.
Yeah, they have done. They're 3-1, top of the league right now, tied with Villanova, St. John's, and UConn. They've beaten UConn. They have beaten Providence on the road. Providence, in their last 50 games, I think has 4 home losses. At the AMP, formerly known as the Dunk, Seton Hall is 2 of those. Last year it was by about 30. This year, obviously, Bryce Hopkins got hurt in that game. He had already 20 minutes and really had not done much. Super unfortunate overall because, one, Bryce Hopkins is a Fenwick man, as I am, so fryer up. But it's a shame to see because he is such a great player and he means so much to this Providence team. And, you know, we talked about it a bit. They need him in order to be successful this year. And then the game I really did not see coming was at home against Marquette. Marquette has not lost to Seton Hall under Shaka. There is an asterisk there as Greg Elliott obliterated the face and brain of Bryce Aiken on a 3-point shot that somehow was called a foul and not an offensive, where he ended up hitting free throws and ending that game, for those who remember. Tyler Kolick was an absolute non-factor in this game. Kadari Richmond continues to ascend and become one of the just playmakers in the entire Big East. He had 21 points, 5 assists in this game. Really one of his more quiet games defensively. The difference, though, Alamir Dawes, when he is on and when he plays well, this team can beat just about anyone. Defensively, they are locked in. They are bought in overall to what Shaw is preaching. They understand their identity at this point. The question is, can they put together for a full season? Can they put together against the teams that they should be? That's what we're going to find out this week. They have Georgetown in about 5 minutes as we're recording. Absolute can't lose. Cannot lose this game. And then they have a road trip to Butler, which is an interesting challenge because Butler, I think, is a lot better than their record shows, and they have the ability to make shots. But what they've done so far against the top teams in the Big East is nothing short of remarkable. It's great to see, and they have put themselves squarely in the NCAA tournament conversation, because if you go head-to-head with a number of these bubble teams, no one has the 3 wins that they do. There's absolutely no one in that conversation that has the wins they do. And while they do have 5 losses already this year, the worst is Rutgers, I think, and that's just because they're in a free fall at this point. But that's their only loss of note that is not good.
Yeah, I mean, Indiana going to Jersey Mike's Arena in about 30 minutes. I'm hoping the fans can't get there because of the conditions, but Rutgers stock could soon turn back up. Don't you worry. like you've been talking about, just trying to find some help for Richmond, especially offensively, has been big. And Tyler Kolick, this is sort of he's not having a bad season, but
right,
he does like to chirp, and mm-hmm. It would have been so perfect if he was not a small white point guard and could have just gone to the NBA after last season, because you're never going to top the fuck 'em and the preseason right. Press conference, win Big East Player of the Year. You ignore what they did in the tournament, but won the Big East, and now seems like everybody's coming for him this year. Had the the embarrassing quote unquote, just in terms of the rivalry in that loss to Wisconsin. He's chirping a little pregame here and then pretty much a no-show for him. So yeah, it's a huge credit to Seton Hall taking away exactly what Marquette likes to do, who they like to run through. And yeah, I mean, UConn and Marquette, you're not going to find really two better wins out there to get in the Big East this year. No disrespect to Greg McDermott.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all of a sudden they have 3 quad one wins, and that is a game changer when it comes to Selection Sunday. So like I said, focus on it's got to be one game at a time. This team, I'm so glad they were not ranked this week, because one, they're not deserving of it. And two, I think that's way too much, too fast. And it's a recipe for disaster, especially coming into at Georgetown, where there'll be maybe 85 people in the arena, and then you're at Butler, which would be a much better environment, but also a very tough road game.
And it's kind of a theme through college basketball now, is everyone is in conference play. If you play in a good conference, you will have great opportunities for wins. Seton Hall is taking advantage of that. There's obviously the other side of that, where, you know, a team like BYU starts off strong, and now they might take a lot of losses because they play in a good conference. But it's just, there are going to be great opportunities in the Big East this year, certainly, and it's all about how you take advantage of those opportunities. And so far, Seton Hall is doing just that, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I almost wore the shirt before I changed out of it, but I got a shout out Auburn. They are putting a hurting on some teams. Arkansas definitely is struggling to this point in the season, maybe even more so than they normally do to start the year, which is fairly uncharacteristic when you talk about roster construction under Musselman. There are more veterans on this team versus all the five stars he had been bringing in. But Auburn goes to Bud Walton Arena and beats Arkansas by 32, which is the worst loss Arkansas has suffered since the arena opened in the 90s. So Auburn seems like they are very much for real. We've talked about them a couple times before. They had just incredible balance in this game and just doing everything they wanted against Arkansas. Dominated them on the boards, dominated them on second chance points, as you would expect. Dominated them in bench points, which is, you know, not surprising for this Auburn team. Somewhat surprising for a Must team who normally takes pride in having such a deep rotation, but that really speaks to Auburn this year. They come at you in waves. They are relentless. They will pressure you nonstop, and they will just wear you down. And I mean, I think we're going to see at least a few more results like this season, where they just continue to do this to teams.
Yeah. They are a metric darling right now. They're finally getting the recognition. We kind of talked about it early in the season. They had nice wins, and they were winning games, period. But they were a little hollow. This win on the road at Arkansas certainly opens up some eyes. They are number 5 overall in KenPom. They are top 10 offensively and defensively. They're doing it with a higher tempo, which really only Arizona can say they do. North Carolina somewhat. Alabama also hanging around there. But they play a fun brand of basketball, and it's working, and they've got everything firing for them.
Yeah, and it's just going to be part of a great SEC race this year. I've definitely got some things to touch on and losers with that conference, but you know, Auburn was definitely a team that made a big statement early, as we get to pretty much the conference only portion of the year. That was the opening Saturday for the SEC. Mm-hmm. Who else did you have as a winner?
I'm gonna give Dayton a shout out. They are 2-0 right now in the A-10, sit atop the league with a surprise Loyola team and George Mason, who has played well throughout the non-conference, but win on the road by double digits at Davidson. This is not necessarily the Davidson of years past, but they were 10-3 coming into that game, playing well, and then they beat UMass, who has had a pretty solid season up until this point. as well. Daron Holmes looks like an absolute star, All-American type talent. He's been obviously good for a number of years now, but he's really putting it together this season and through conference play early. We've seen him get back to levels that we saw just a year ago with his numbers, both scoring-wise and then on the glass and defensively.
Yeah, I mean, Dayton is 100% that large team. Holmes is a future NBA player for sure. No bad losses. Lost to Northwestern and Houston. The win over Cincinnati seems like it's going to age pretty darn well.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is the hope for the A-10 this year. We've talked about the conference a little bit. It doesn't have the top end talent that we grew accustomed to when they were sending, you know, 3-4 teams to the tournament every year. Right now, it looks like the only chance the conference has to be a multi-bid league is if someone trips up Dayton in the conference tournament. Lot of time left, but they look leaps and bounds better than just about everybody in the conference. And by that proxy, like we talked about with FAU, they're definitely going to get everyone's best shot, best effort, and UMass came close. But I think this offense spearheaded by Holmes is really fun to watch. And they're going to be a dangerous team come March for sure.
No doubt about it. And I think they're still missing their top guard. I got to go back and look. But anyways, I have not watched enough Dayton basketball. I just know they've been playing very well. I wanted to give them a shout out.
Yeah, I'm going to give Utah State a shout out. I don't think it was even on TV, but Utah State, Colorado State, one of the games of the weekend, but just speaks to kind of how jammed Saturday was. Still feel like FS1 could have thrown him a bone or something, but they knocked off Colorado State, handing the Rams just their second loss of the season. And Utah State now is the only one loss, respect to Nevada. But Utah State also only has one loss. Mountain West is fun.
It's very good.
But Danny Sprinkle coming in, Utah State, a place that has had a pretty solid basketball tradition, but not to this level in quite some time. I feel like in terms of just getting into the top 25 and nobody batting an eye. Joel Scott was just overwhelmed by Grado Sabor for most of the evening, which is no small task. And another 20-point, 14-rebound performance just kind of speaks to what he's been doing all season, in addition to just having an 11 out of 10 name. And, I mean, this Utah State team, they did not really even shoot the ball that well in this game, but still were able to take down a team led by a guard as dynamic as Isaiah Stevens. Just, we're going to see a lot of these games this year in the Mountain West. And I hope, because we've been in this situation before, I hope it is a year where the Mountain West shows up in March. I think there's a little bit more juice this year in terms of top end teams. They've been getting, you know, 4 or 5 teams in the tournament, a lot of 10 and 11 seeds. I think we can set our sights higher this year. I think both the teams in this game, Utah State, Colorado State, have a great shot at, you know, breaking into the 7 line or higher, depending on how the rest of the season goes. And this was a great win for Utah State to sort of start that conversation.
Yeah, the league as a whole has 6 teams in the top 66, and that's an arbitrary number, but I picked it because of the fact that Boise State is number 66. UNL, like, even the bottom of the league isn't that bad. UNLV can give people some games. Fresno's not bad. Wyoming still has some talent. Like, there are some decent teams still out there. And don't forget the Tim Miles coach, San Jose State Spartans. So that's always a nice gem. But yeah, this is been a very good year already for the Mountain West. You just hope there's not too much beating up on each other here. Obviously, it has to happen with, what, 6 teams that have a shot at the NCAA tournament. But continuing to play like this, I think Utah State has a very good chance to win the league. They score the ball a ton. They share the ball really well. And they rebound pretty decently. So watch out for the Aggies.
it's really just lose to each other. Nobody's going to penalize. No one should penalize Colorado State for a loss like this. But these are the kind of games that it's kind of okay to lose, but you got to take care of business against the bottom teams of the league. That's really what it comes down to. But the good news is a lot of these teams gave themselves a little bit of rope with just fantastic non-conference performances.
Mm-hmm.
That was it for winners for me. I did all I could.
I have two more, and I have a shout out. So okay. Texas Tech is another team that I wanted to call out. Pop Isaacs has been great. He was great against Texas. 21 points. He's got three straight games over 20 points scoring. That is really their first and biggest win of the season that they kind of needed to spring them back into the conversation of, hey, remember us, Texas Tech is still a good team. They obviously will have the rest of a gauntlet that is the Big 12 to go, but the open bit of it is pretty nice, and they can get either into the rankings or continue to build their place in terms of just overall standings in the league, because they have Oklahoma State and Kansas State, two teams that have struggled a bit this year, at home to open before they're at Houston, home for BYU, and then at Oklahoma, which is just a brutal three-game stretch. This team is playing well right now and deserves a shout out.
Yeah, you cannot fake your way through the Big 12. That's been true for some years now. And I mean, just a well-traveled guy like Joe Toussaint now finding a home in the starting backcourt. Washington has been great in the front court as well. Texas Tech is a team I don't think people really had too high of expectations coming into the season, but you go to Texas, you win by double digits on the road, people are going to take notice. So this is exactly the kind of win you have to get in conference play, start to build sort of that tournament resume, since, you know, the non-conference had some opportunities. Really, the loss at Butler was the one that probably feels the most painful, and not really a bad loss, but one they probably thought that they could have and should have had. They've clearly bounced back from that in a big way.
Yeah, big time. Indiana State, another team that deserves a shout out. 4-0 for the Sycamores in a pretty solid but top heavy Missouri Valley. They're 13-2 on the year. They've got wins over Evansville, who played well earlier in the season, Northern Iowa, who has not played that great but is talented. At Bradley, they've beaten Southern Illinois. They've beaten, those are two teams that are fighting at the top of the league. They, again, we talked about it a little bit earlier in the season. Isaiah Swope, Robbie Avila, Ryan Conwell, all very good players and are scoring the ball a ton for this Indiana State team.
Yeah, and I mean, they're going to be the team to beat in conference, certainly. And I mean, they did compete pretty well in East Lansing. The final scoreline might not reflect it. They did end up losing by double digits, but they were very much in that game against a Michigan State team that was just finally starting to play well. So if you want to go the quality loss route, you can find that there too. But
yeah,
I mean, They're the only team in conference to beat Southern Illinois. It's going to be a much more challenging valley than it used to be, especially with Belmont lurking there now too. Mm-hmm. We know what Drake and Tucker DeVries can do, but yeah, this is Indiana State's a lot of fun. Like we watch them play offense, Robbie Avila, the young Jokic. I am certainly rooting for Indiana State to continue on this run. So I always like to see some new blood in the tournament.
Yeah, agreed. Last team that gets just a shout out is an old friend has returned with a triple double, and his name is Andre Curbelo. He had a triple double in a win over Georgia State. They are at 2-1 right now in the Sun Belt, and they've got plenty of opportunity to continue on and do some damage, because Austin Crowley's well. He's obviously got a dynamic backcourt partner now in Curbelo. And it seems like he's found his speed, or at least found his lane in which he can play and do some damage.
Yeah, just going to continue to have a very, very high usage rate. And Sunbelt teams are going to, you know, just start imploring the NCAA. It's like, hey, let's get this guy sitting out again 2 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's seen his opening and he's taken advantage, obviously starting off slow. But yeah, now going up against some good teams, which leads into my first loser, the James Madison Dukes.
Mm-hmm.
They lost a game. That's really the big thing, because they might not be an at-large team. And, you know, obviously if they run the table and have one loss, it won't matter, because I guess they'll win the Sun Belt tournament. But
right,
if they win, if they lose another game or two, we're going to start to have some very interesting conversations. I think anyone who has watched them play will tell you James Madison is a good basketball team. That
yeah.
does not seem up for debate. But when you just look at the numbers, who have they beaten? The Michigan State win obviously has aged like milk, although the Spartans are trying to kind of get back to respectability themselves. There's really not a lot of meat on the bone for the rest of the non-conference schedule. So anytime you're losing to the Fighting Andre Curbelos, or really anybody else in the Sun Belt. I know there's some dangerous teams. That the App State win over Auburn makes less and less sense with each passing game, because Auburn just looks so good. But yeah, it's just a real unfortunate situation to be in, because they are a good basketball team. They've won a lot of games. They will continue to win a lot of games, but any losses are just killer to their hopes of making the tournament as an at-large team. Of course, if you win the tournament, Sun Belt Conference tournament, you're in no matter what, but
yeah.
It's always nice to at least know going in that this isn't the end of the world if we do lose.
The good news is they will have a quad one win pretty much no matter what happens this season, because Michigan State is already 9-6 and they're still inside the top 30 of the net. So riddle me that, but that's where it is. So they need Michigan State to fall outside of, I think, the top 70 for that to drop. But the problem is, like you mentioned, almost every game in league play, especially at home, will be a Q3 or Q4 game. So there really isn't any opportunity to punch up the resume. Two or three more losses and they could easily find themselves, they're at 55 right now in the net rankings, they could easily find themselves in the 80s or worse. And at that point, you're really not going to get the opportunity to be an at-large team, unless you have that number next to your name, which for whatever reason seems to change the way the committee and others look at these teams.
Yeah, they could turn into Charleston from last year, who didn't really have a ton of great wins,
yeah.
but that record just looked so great and they were ranked for a lot of the season. But yeah, it's App State's really the only team I'd be worried about in the Sun Belt. Famous last words, but I mean, Southern Miss after the win is still in the 200s in KenPom and probably will not be getting into the hundreds if current trends continue. But yeah, it's unfortunate. This is what happens sometimes. This is kind of what Gonzaga was like before they started scheduling very aggressively in the non-conference and winning a lot of those games, which they did not do this year. But yeah, a lot of pressure going to be on James Madison the rest of the season.
Yeah.
I also had a team you kind of mentioned, Texas. Why are they ranked? Mm-hmm. This is it's kind of like Gonzaga. I mean, they made Louisville look pretty darn good earlier in the season, and they really have not improved too much since. And I would hear a similar conversation to what we said last week about Gonzaga. Like, They beat LSU, who is not good. They beat Wyoming, who is having a bad year for them. Certainly not the heights of Wyoming teams the last couple of years. They had an opportunity against UConn. They lost that. They had an opportunity against Marquette. They got smoked. And, I mean, you know, Texas Tech is playing better. I wouldn't necessarily call that an opportunity, certainly not on the same level, but definitely an opportunity to get a quality win over a conference foe who has aspirations of making the tournament, because right now there are zero tournament teams that they have beaten.
Yeah.
So I'm really not sure why they are ranked.
I agree. I agree. It's one of those where the resume does not match what's going on. And it just makes you question whether or not people are actually watching the games and how we get these arbitrary numbers. But the good news, they are in the Big 12. As we've talked about many, 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 many times, this is a very good league. They will have a ton of different opportunities. And if you just look at the schedule, they've got at Cincinnati, at West Virginia, UCF at home. Ideally, you're going 3-0. If you're a top 25 team, you're probably going 3-0 in this stretch. And then the gauntlet starts. You're at Oklahoma, at BYU, home for Houston, at TCU, home for Iowa State. That's not an easy stretch, and it does not get easier from there. So Texas is in kind of a pivot spot for me. I know they're talented, but I just, like you said, they've beaten zero tournament teams at this point. There's nothing that tells me, based on how they've done, that they are a good team. Everything on paper says that they're a good team. What they've done, I still don't see it.
Yeah, it's a good roster. That's honestly probably why people are still giving them the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, like at minimum, this three-game stretch, you have to win the last two. You have to beat West Virginia, who seems clearly the worst team in the conference, or UCF, who might be in that conversation as well, just being their first year, a huge step up for not a basketball school in the Big 12. Cincinnati tonight on the road could be challenging. Maybe Cincinnati reading the press clippings a bit too much after the win at BYU. We'll see, but I can cut them a little slack for that if they win the next two, but either way, should not be ranked.
Agreed. I'm going to give Clemson a shout out here.
Yeah.
Our dear friend Brad, he flew a little too close to the sun. Loss at Miami and then a double-digit loss against North Carolina, where the offense just really did not seem to get on track whatsoever. They managed just 55 points in that game, shot 5% from three, 36% from the field. Just really an ugly game at home. And some cracks are starting to show in the armor. This is another, like, they do have the win over Alabama. They have a win over TCU. It's much better than what Texas has. It's much better than what Gonzaga has. They're losing to good teams, though. This is the question that now becomes, are they good enough to beat top-tier ACC teams, which there aren't very many of, or are they going to lose all those games and then inflate their record by beating the rest of the pack, who really are not very good?
I'm still of the opinion Clemson is good, but from a perspective of, there is a pretty clear opportunity to win the ACC this year. This was a disastrous week because we talked about the Miami game, just let Miami outscore them and then just got locked down by North Carolina. Those are two huge opportunities that you will not get against the rest of the league. It's really just them. I mean, Wake Forest is coming on strong and maybe in that conversation and then Duke. I mean, that's really it for the ACC this year. So if you fancy yourself kind of a top tier team nationally, a challenger for the conference title, you can't really let, you know, Miami do whatever they want against you. And then North Carolina just come into your place and punk you. I mean, and also just the sad sight of Dabo with the shiner on the sideline that just raised more questions than it answered. I will say that. But yeah, this is not good for Brad. I think he's got in terms of job security, I'm still confident in our boy. But these are like, Clemson does not get the opportunity very often to compete for ACC titles in basketball. And that will continue to be true. So this really feels like a wasted week.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the perfect way to describe it, is there was opportunity here to kind of establish themselves in the ACC race, and now they've dug themselves maybe too big a hole at this point.
Yeah. We'll see. Time will tell. My last one, Ole Miss, extremely fraudulent. We kind of were operating under that assumption, but had to talk about them right. while they were still undefeated. But I love Tennessee, so it's great to see them absolutely hammer a quote-unquote good team. But you lose by 26 to Tennessee in a game where Dalton Kincaid only scores 9 points. That is pretty telling on both sides, really. That Tennessee can score that much without just kind of relying on Kincaid, and then Ole Miss, quote-unquote, limiting the best offensive player by a mile and still giving up 90 points. And just really, really getting abused on the boards too, is not necessarily unique to Tennessee opponents. Tennessee, very physical, has a great group of front court guys who are able to establish their will, but almost got out-rebounded 2-1 in this game. That's more than what can be expected. And that raises a lot of concerns as well. If you can't defend, struggle to rebound, there are much better offensive teams than Tennessee in this league. So
yeah,
you know, we talked about Auburn already. So yeah, that is for sure a reason for concern.
Yeah, I think the most telling stat from this game is that Zakai Ziegler is 5'9". He had 17 points, 10 assists, 5 rebounds, and a block. But he had he would be tied for second most rebounds on Ole Miss. The only person that had more was Jalen Murray, had 8. And he had 2 offensive rebounds, which is half of what Ole Miss as a team had at 5'9". So they got thoroughly and utterly dominated in this game.
Yeah, that is big on the that can't happen rankings. As an aside, Ziegler, since he is inserted into the starting lineup, has been playing some very, very good basketball. I'm as high as I've ever been. That's not true, but I am as high as I've been in a while on Tennessee. So this was a good result, but also very bad for Ole Miss.
Yeah. My last loser is our favorite team, the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. They are the only winless team in Big Ten play. I understand they're playing Indiana shortly, and this is me saying it. It's not you, but since they beat Seton Hall, they beat a bad Long Island team. They lost by 10 to Mississippi State. They needed a buzzer beater from Derek Simpson to beat Stonehill at home. They lost to Ohio State in a game that really was not as close as the score says. And then they got smoked by a bad Iowa team on the road. This team is really struggling on both ends of the floor. They are in a very fortunate place where they can always put to next season as, oh, look, we have 2 top recruits, so we'll just continue. We'll wait till then to be better. And I worry for them because of the fact that Steve Peichel is one of the worst offensive coaches in America. They are 231st in offensive efficiency. You look back and think, well, they had guys like Caleb McConnell, Geo Baker, Ron Harper Jr. Like, those are 3 pretty good offensive players, and they still managed 1 NCAA tournament win. Why do we think it's going to be different if the talent level is up a little higher? Especially with guys one and done. I won't even get in, but it's very difficult overall to see this Rutgers team figuring out the offensive side of the ball. They need to lock in defensively. That's where it's very similar to Seton Hall. Your defense feeds your offense, and if they're not playing defense at a high level, they get exposed pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, they're reverse Iowa on steroids, right? Like,
yeah,
sometimes the biggest gap in Iowa between, you know, offensive and defensive rankings on KenPom will be like 100 spots. Here it is 218, because they're 13th in defensive efficiency, which tells me a 45-40 Rutgers win soon come in Jersey Mike's Arena in just a few minutes. It is going to be disgusting. I'm going to have to subject myself to Peacock and Steven Bardo for at least a half before I find something else to do. But if you're Bailey and Harper, how are you watching this? Be like, yes, I want to play.
I think it's because they know they're going to get infinite minutes. Like they get all the shots and all the minutes.
Harper hasn't signed yet.
That's true.
I keep being told by people, but yeah, it's, I'm not going to say anything until it's over and things happen one way or the other, but rest assured, Rutger still has not earned the S. So
correct.
We know that, but yeah, it's you know, quality basketball team probably, cause they beat Seton Hall. So I'm going to show respect for now.
Just know they're a 29% 3-point shooting team on the season. They hit 12 and shot 50% against Seton Hall. So riddle me that.
Yeah, I mean, the first part of that is good because I don't know. Army shot 1,000,000% against Indiana, and they're in the same territory. Everyone shoots well against Indiana except for Ohio State, thankfully, who missed like 15 wide open 3-pointers. So now I'm worried about that too, but it'll be fine.
If it happens to you, it's happened to both of us. So we're in the same boat.
We're just going to go out there and have a good time. Exactly. All right. That'll do it for us. We will see you next week, and it'll be all basketball from here on out. So we'll see you then.